Hello, and welcome to another intensivecareholdline.com and intensive care at home live stream. Ask me anything, life support, ICU decisions, tracheostomy, intensive care at home. My name is Patrick Hutzel, and I will be the host of this show today. We are approximately going for an hour where you can ask me anything, and that's your opportunity to ask me questions directly. I also want to welcome any viewers that are watching this on replay, because I know we get quite a lot of views on replay. So thank you for anyone attending live and for anyone watching this on replay. So before we go into today's questions, what makes me qualified to host a live stream, ask me anything for families in intensive care and intensive care at home? I am a critical care nurse by background, having worked in ICU and critical care nursing for over 25 years in three different countries, where I worked as a nurse unit manager for over 5 years in intensive care. And I've been consulting and advocating for families in intensive care since 2013 here at intensivecareholdline.com. And I can very, very confidently say that we have saved many lives for our clients in intensive care, and you can verify that on our testimonial section at intensivecareholdline.com, and you can also verify it on our intensivecareholdline.com podcast section, where we have done client interviews. I am also the founder and managing director of Intensive Care at Home, and you can get more information at intensivecareathome.com. With Intensive Care at Home, we are sending our critical care nurses into the home 24 hours a day as a genuine alternative to a long-term stay in intensive care. And we have been doing so since 2013 as well. No, since 2012 even. And again, you can find more information at intensivecareathome.com. I started both organizations, Intensive Care at Home and Intensive Care Hotline, around the same time. On the one hand, we're serving families in intensive care with consulting and advocacy and getting results. And we are serving long-term intensive care patients at home, predominantly for ventilation, tracheostomy, ventilation without tracheostomy, tracheostomy without ventilation, cough assist machine at home, BiPAP, CPAP ventilation, seizure management at home, home TPN, home IV potassium, home IV magnesium infusions, IV antibiotics, central line, PEEK line, Hickman's line, as well as port management at home, nasogastric tube, PEEK tube, patch tubes, nasojejunal tube at home as well. So anyone that otherwise would be in intensive care long term, we can provide care at home to improve their quality of life. In some instances, quality of end of life, which obviously includes palliative care. We employ hundreds of years of critical care nursing experience combined in the community. And we are also third party ISO 9001 and 2015 accredited. No other service provider in the community brings a higher level of accreditation into the community, including the skill level. Like I said, we are employing hundreds of years of critical care nursing experience combined in the community. No other service provider can match that level of skill that we are bringing into the community, which obviously includes the intellectual property that we have built for intensive care at home as well. Now, we're also providing level 2 and level 3 NDIS support coordination. Now, in the meantime, if you want to talk to me directly, you can go to the StreamYard link that I just posted in the chat pad, or you can type your question into the chat pad. But the quickest way to talk to me is directly with the StreamYard link, and that way you can get your questions answered as quickly as possible. Now, without further ado, let's start with some testimonials that have rolled in since the last live stream. It's always nice if we get testimonials from our clients and from our members. Here is one from Lisa, who says, I found Patrick and intensivecarehotline.com online, sitting in my daughter's ICU hospital room 6 years ago when my then 36-year-old daughter was in a car wreck. She was in a coma for 94 days. While in the coma, the doctors and nurses didn't think she would wake up, and they just wanted to move her to a nursing home until she died. She was in ICU for 14 days, then in an LTAC for 80 days, which is when she woke up. For the entire 80 days in LTAC, the medical personnel were trying to move her to a nursing home. Insurance was also an issue, but in both cases, you don't have to take no for an answer. Well, obviously, when Lisa is talking about an LTAC here, so obviously Lisa is in the US. Patients going from ICU to LTAC is unique to the US. Doesn't really happen in any other English-speaking country. We strictly advise against LTAC. I've made a video about 10 reasons why LTACs are a scam a while ago, and I can only encourage you to watch this video. Let's continue in Lisa's testimonial. I never had a one-on-one consulting with Patrick. I just had the information he gives for free on the internet. But even that just was absolutely life-changing. As he says, you don't know what you don't know. I learned from him not to be intimidated by the doctors or nurses. They are just people, the same as us. He gave me the courage to stand up to them and to advocate for my daughter and her care. Now she's doing well. She was in inpatient rehabilitation for 2 years in three different facilities. That's another thing. When one facility says you can't stay anymore, look for another one. Her insurance covered all her neuro rehab. She's been home for 4 years now and lives with me. She's mostly independent, but still has spasticity issues, which makes walking difficult. She's in physical therapy 2 times a week. She does have an axonal diffuse brain injury from the wreck, which contributes to her physical problems, but she's pretty much the same person she was before. I just wanted to say thank you, Patrick, and let you know that if your loved one is in the ICU, Patrick's information is beyond life-changing, from Lisa. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing that, and Anna, you've shared it on my YouTube channel as a comment, so I really appreciate it because I think this is so much encouragement for any other family that has a loved one critically ill in intensive care. And there's too many families in ICU, probably 99% of families, that just will take no for an answer and will just roll over and will not fight for their critically ill loved one. And you can see here and in many other testimonials and podcast interviews that we've done over the years that anything is possible as long as you don't give up, as long as you don't take no for an answer, as long as you apply proven tactics and strategies. And the outcome is change. And let me just reiterate here what I have reiterated on many other of my blogs. Depending on which strategies you, or which research papers you believe, approximately 10 to 30% of ICU patients survive. So that means the odds are in your loved one's favor. So for the ICU team to come to you and, put the doom and gloom spiel on you and the negativity, and say, well, it's your loved one is not going to survive and your loved one's going to die tomorrow. Well, the reality is every day your loved one is surviving, that narrative goes down the drain. That narrative needs to be questioned, right? Because that's how powerful it is, questioning things. You need to question everything. Now, on the other hand, just coming back to Lisa's testimonial. So this is just by Lisa watching videos and reading my blog. Imagine how powerful the information is that I share with you one and one, and how quickly we can get results one and one. The biggest challenge for families in intensive care is that they don't know what they don't know. They don't know what to look for. They don't know what questions to ask. They don't know their rights and they don't know how to manage doctors and nurses in intensive care. So imagine when you and I get on a call, I can hear it, within 10, 15 minutes, definitely less than an hour. I know I can change your world because you simply don't know what you don't know. And ICU teams are trying to brainwash you into their narrative of doom and gloom and negativity. And you can't afford that. You are in a once-in-a-lifetime situation that you simply cannot afford to get wrong. Right? And that's what I do here at Intensive Care at Home and intensivecarehotline.com. We are changing lives and we're improving lives. And we have changed and improved so many lives. We have saved so many lives over the years. What makes you think that I can't help you either? So another testimonial that came in was from Halima. Halima says, and Halima was one of our members. We have a membership for families of critically ill patients in intensive care, by the way, where you have access to me and my team 24 hours a day in the membership area and via email, and we answer all questions intensive care related. And review medical records there as well. So Halima says, "Hi, Patrick. Thank you for your support for the past few months. My sister is slowly making progress. It will be a long, torturous journey for my sister and my family. The doctors and family are doing what we can, getting the care she needs when she needs it. She's now finally in rehabilitation. Thank you for all your support and your team's support during the critical time in ICU. It was eye-opening and life-changing." So this is a client who had their sister in ICU. Sister would have been early to mid-50s. She had a stroke. And ICU went in there basically wanting to withdraw treatment without giving any options. And we said, no. If you want to give your sister a chance, she needs to have a tracheostomy. So she was initially ventilated with a breathing tube. And the ICU just said, well, let's do a one-way extubation, basically remove the breathing tube and let their sister die. And we obviously advocated for a tracheostomy. Well, I should say we successfully advocated for a tracheostomy because that's what we do. We successfully advocate. And again, that shows in our testimonials. It shows in our podcasts with clients where you can hear how we have saved their loved ones' lives with our consulting and advocacy. Because we understand intensive care inside out. We know the moving pieces. We know what to look for. We know how to advocate. So, some testimonials, but also another testimonial that came in was from Reno. Reno and his family contacted me in July. We're now in sort of mid-September. They contacted me in mid-July. And Reno's, I think, 51-year-old brother was in ICU at the time. Again, he had a massive hemorrhagic stroke that came out of nowhere. He ended up in ICU on a ventilator with a breathing tube with a very grim prognosis. Well, at least that's what the ICU team said, that he wouldn't survive. That, even if he does survive, he's having no quality of life, or he won't have any quality of life, and that it's, quote unquote, in his best interest to let their brother die. Right? I've yet to find out why it's in someone's best interest to die. I've yet to find out where's the rush to kill someone. I've yet to find out where's the urgency to kill someone. The urgency should be to help people to improve. That's where the urgency should be. Cutting long story short, I attended some family meetings in ICU in person, as it was local to me. And the ICU initially was very adamant, almost bullying the family to agree to a withdrawal of treatment, then the ICU team is wanting to make it look like, oh yeah, we'll just take the breathing tube out tomorrow and see what happens. And if he's struggling, we'll just give him morphine to make him comfortable. Well, that is a euphemism for killing someone. Okay, taking life support away, quote unquote, seeing how things go, seeing how people are going. And if they're struggling, to give them morphine or midazolam or a combination of both, that is euphemism for we let your loved one die. Think about that. Right? So, obviously what we did instead is told the family that they should be advocating for tracheostomy. Now, they had no idea what a tracheostomy was, right? And the ICU didn't tell them what a tracheostomy was. They didn't even tell them that a tracheostomy is an option. So I was the first one to bring it up, and the immediate response from the ICU team was, oh, he wouldn't be a candidate for that. And I said, what? Why would he not be a candidate for it? Right? And they really had no answer. The family then wrote to hospital executive, as I advised them to keep advocating for their brother and father and husband, and also to put pressure on the hospital to say, well, we have not been informed about a tracheostomy as an option, that they were misleading the family, that they were misleading the patient, not that the patient could make any decisions here, but they were basically trying to mislead everyone until, you know, my advice was sought. And again, this is what I mean. I do understand intensive care inside out. I do understand about treatment options. I know what intensive care teams don't tell you. I know how to advocate. You know, so after two meetings in ICU with the ICU team, they finally agreed to do a tracheostomy because they really had no way out, no way forward. They could make no more excuses in terms of saying, oh yeah, this patient is going to die regardless. So you also have to question their clinical judgment. If they're telling you that your family member is dying, you have to question. You have to question everything, right? Again, especially now that you know, to 30% of patients in intensive care survive. That's 70 to 90% of intensive care patients surviving. The odds are in your family member's favor. So I'm a strong believer that the narrative in intensive care needs to shift from, oh, you know, your loved one's going to die, and to, well, here's how we can help your loved one. The narrative needs to change. Right? And it all comes down to asking the right questions. The minute you start asking the right questions and you know what to look for, the dynamics will change in your favor in no time. So, funnily enough, you know, I am in contact with this client, and sort of, you know, I'm talking to them every few weeks, and the progress that this man was making after he had a tracheostomy was remarkable. Right? It was absolutely remarkable. Right? So some of the texts that the family has sent me: my brother's doing good. He has been moved to the stroke ward. They removed the tracheostomy a few days ago. And within a week or two, should start his rehabilitation. That is from someone where the intensive care team said, oh, he'll die any minute from now. So some of you watching this might ask, why would they mislead families? Well, I'm glad you've asked. The worst case scenario for an ICU is to look after a patient indefinitely with an uncertain outcome. That's the worst case scenario, because it blocks ICU beds that are in high demand, right? It gets ICU teams to deal with quote-unquote difficult families, especially if they ask all the right questions. right? And ICUs, it's clear to me that ICUs want to decide who lives and dies, right? Well, you should decide whether your loved one is going to live or die. Nobody else. Right? So, other things that the family said is, he was trying to mouth some words. He was having some ice cream, and also he pulled out his nasogastric tube, which is also a good sign. At least he's having sensations and he realizes what's bothering him. So those are really all good signs. And then a couple of weeks later, they sent me some pictures of their brother. He's sitting in a chair. They've taken a picture in front of the hospital with the whole family. And it's amazing. And my comment to the pictures was, well, it's a miracle. He's coming back from the proposed deathbed from the infallible ICU team. ICU teams are not infallible. And one thing is for sure, if you buy into the negative narrative and you buy into, well, your loved one's definitely going to die, you know the outcome. If you give your loved one a chance and you'll fight for it, you don't know the outcome. But I can tell you, more often than not, your loved one will have a good chance. And more often than not, you will see that your loved one will live. Maybe not quite the quality of life that they had before, but probably still a life worth living. Food for thought. Now, also, what's really important here is that you know the difference between a real and a perceived end-of-life situation. What's the difference between a real and perceived end-of-life situation? Well, I'm glad you've asked. A real end-of-life situation in intensive care is a situation where no treatment, no surgery, no equipment, no medications, no nothing will save your loved one's life. They're going to die. That's a real end-of-life situation. What's a perceived end-of-life situation, on the contrary? Well, let's take this situation that I've just given you a minute ago, where we had our client with a hemorrhagic stroke in ICU, where the client was in ICU, ventilated, he was in a deep coma, he had high intracranial pressures, and things weren't looking good. But just because things weren't looking good, the family didn't give up. Right, and they got me in to advocate, successfully advocate, right? And he survived, and he's improving. So that was a perceived end of life situation. If you had given in, or if the family had given in, he would have died. Because the ICU would have just stopped life support and he would have died. He would have drowned in his own sputum. Because here's what happens, if you extubate patients with a stroke, well, stroke patients, can't swallow. So if your loved one had, if their loved one had been extubated, he would have drowned in his own secretions and he would have died of an aspiration pneumonia. Tracheostomy has prevented that. Right, so it makes you wonder why did the ICU there in this situation not offer tracheostomy in the first place and willingly let this patient die? How cruel! Food for thought for you. Okay, so let's go back to some questions that have come in during the week and questions from our members. And questions that we get in general. So, Let's go back. I do apologize. I just need to scroll through my emails. Okay, here's an email from Jennifer. She's also one of our members, who says, "Hi, Patrick and team. Can Jim's tracheostomy and PEG tube be removed from home, or will he have to go back to the hospital again for that if he still has it coming home with him? And what about the dialysis tube? How will I know when he doesn't need dialysis anymore? Can all of those be removed from home, or does it require another hospital visit?" So, both tracheostomy and PEG tube can be removed at home, and so can a dialysis catheter, assuming it's a vas cath, can all be removed at home. Right? That's the short version of it, especially when you have intensive care at home and we have 24/7 critical care nurses at home. Right? So, and do we think, is it okay to bring a patient home with a tracheostomy, a PEG, and dialysis? Absolutely, yes. With intensive care at home, that's bread and butter for us. You know, that is bread and butter for us. Even if your family member was connected to a ventilator with a tracheostomy and a PEG tube, he can go home, you know, with 24/7 critical care nurses, as is evidence-based. Right. So then let's go to the next question in the meantime. If you have any questions, please type them into the chat pad or connect with me live here on the StreamYard link. So here is another question from Deborah. Hi Patrick, the short-term rehabilitation center that they're planning to discharge her to on the 24th has a nurse ratio of 20-1. I am very concerned about that ratio considering my mum's neurological state, and I'd like your opinion on that matter. Also ask the respiratory team to test her on room air to see if her oxygen level drops or if it maintains at 100%. Now, I think this is important considering the lower level of care and the lower level of attention. It's important to know what she could tolerate in that environment if they can't accommodate the 5-1 ratio she experienced at the current facility. I do plan to contact Patrick to discuss intensive care at home options and alternatives for my mum. I would like very much to not have her in the new facility for a long period of time because they just don't have the capacity. Thanks for everything you do. Also, regarding her limited CPR and her DNR, I'm aware of that based upon conversations with a nurse I know. They're saying CPR is brutal and very painful for the recipient, often fracturing bones, and is rarely successful on someone in my mother's condition. What is your opinion of CPR and DNR? Great question. Well, Deborah, you should not let your mum go from a 5-1 to a 20-1, especially with a tracheostomy and a PEG tube. And I know that you and I discussed that at length on one of our calls, and I've given you the reasons why. So, first off, when you look at our website, intensivecareathome.com, you will find there's a section of the mechanical home ventilation guidelines. The mechanical home ventilation guidelines are evidence-based, and they are clearly recommending that exclusively critical care nurses with a minimum of 2 years critical care nursing experience are safe to look after ventilated and tracheostomy clients at home, and even if they're not ventilated. So your mom is falling into that category, right? Anything less than that puts your mom at risk of dying. The reason I'm saying is that unfortunately I can give you real world examples that patients have died without 24/7 critical care nurses on a ventilator or even on a tracheostomy without a ventilator because general registered nurses, let alone support workers, are not able to manage medical emergencies. Right? So, you know, the minute a patient leaves ICU, which is the case in your position, Deborah, they're going from bad to worse. ICU, you have the right level, you have the right staffing levels, but the minute you leave ICU, unless you're going into an intensive care at home environment, you know, clients and patients are at high risk of dying. That's the reality. Now, coming to the hospital wanting to limit CPR and wanting to issue a DNR for your mum, well, number one, if they've already done that, which it sounds to me like they have without your consent, you need to revoke it. And you can revoke it by simply asking them to take it off. Right? So very important that you ask them. Very important that you exercise your rights. Right? Now, and we've helped so many families to revoke a DNR just by simply, you know, calling the hospitals out on that it's illegal to issue a DNR without patient or family consent. Right? So, also, when you're saying in your email, CPR is brutal and very painful for the recipient, often fracturing bones, and is rarely successful on someone in my mother's condition. So let me ask you a question. If your mum, God forbid, goes into cardiac arrest and you're not doing CPR, your mum will die. Okay? Let's just say your mum is going into a PEA cardiac arrest, which is a pulseless electrical activity arrest, which means you've got electrical activity from the conductive system of the heart. You've got the electrical activity, but you've actually got no cardiac output, okay, leading to cardiac arrest, leading to death if you're not intervening. Now, one of the measures for PEA is to start CPR, right, and to defibrillate, to reset the heart, more or less. What if you do that once or twice and your mum's heart starts beating again? Would you still say no to CPR? Would you still say yes to a DNR, to a do not resuscitate? Let's take another scenario. Let's just say your mum's heart, God forbid, is stopping, and the only way to get her back is by starting CPR. Let's just say you do that. You do cardiac compressions for 2-3 beats, right? And your mum comes back. Because that can happen. I've seen it many times where you only need to do a couple of, you know, pushes on the heart, compressions, and the patient comes back and you're not fracturing any ribs at all. Now, if you're doing CPR for an hour and the patient doesn't come back, yes, you will probably fracture some bones. Right, and it may look brutal. I agree with that. But the question still remains, what would your loved one want and what would you want? That question still remains. You know, that's a bit like saying, well, we're not going to operate on you because it'll cause pain. That therefore, let's not operate. Right? I have seen many CPR situations where, you know, you don't need to go all the way to 10, 15, 30 minutes, sometimes up to an hour resuscitation. You give two cardiac compressions and the patient comes back. So by you not giving consent to CPR or by you letting the hospital bully you into signing a DNR and not having CPR for your family member, you are basically signing a death warrant for your family member. Just think about that. Just think about that. Right? Then, next question comes from Anne-Marie. Hi, Patrick. My husband just completed 24 hours on the trach collar this morning. I'm told he still has a lot of secretion, so before being evaluated by the speech therapist, they will use a patch, which I'm told will be ordered today, to keep down the secretions before they use the pacemure valve to assist him to talk, and the speech therapist will be back tomorrow. Is this the normal process of things? Thank you, from Anne-Marie. Now, Anne-Marie, that is fantastic that your husband just completed 24 hours on the trach collar. If he still has a lot of secretions, yes, they could be, he could be doing with a scolopine patch. Right, that will minimize secretions. Then, yes, they should use the pacemure valve. They should use the pacemure speaking valve. And one of the prerequisites to use a pacemure speaking valve is that the cuff needs to be down. So what that means is the tracheostomy cuff, either with water or with air, needs to be removed so that the vocal cords are no longer paralyzed. Then you can put on the speaking valve to start talking. Okay, if that all works and your husband is not going to cough and splatter and, you know, that would be a good sign if he can talk. So that's a really good sign overall. Now, in order to take the next steps and have the tracheostomy removed, one of the other things that should be happening, assuming he can tolerate the pacemure valve, is he should be having the tracheostomy capped, right, so that he can breathe physiologically through the mouth or through the nose. Minimal secretions, he can swallow, and then the tracheostomy should be able to be removed. That is the normal process, right? Also, what goes hand in hand with that is doing swallowing tests, maybe getting him to swallow some ice chips, getting him to swallow some puree diet, some apple puree, some, you know, potato mash, whatever the case may be, right? So then Anne-Marie continues in another email. Hi, Patrick, thanks for your response. Greetings. Secretions are still heavy for my husband. He completed the effortful swallow exercise with a count of 10 today. The speech therapist states that it's the doctor's call to recommend any patch or meds to help with secretions. But they like the patients to manage the secretions on their own. He's not using anything at this time for secretions. What are your thoughts? Well, I think that if the secretions are what's stopping him from having the tracheostomy removed or from having the tracheostomy downsized, because sometimes you have to go through a downsizing process, let's just say it's got a size 8 at the moment. Can you downsize it to a 6 and then to a 4 and then eventually, you know, take the crutch, so to speak, away? You know, the question with managing secretions from a medication point of view, whether it's a scolopine patch or whether it's glycopyrrolate, ideally, you try to avoid that, but if that's the way forward, then why not? You know, you just got to keep in mind that your loved one may need this for quite some time to come, and the minute that you stop giving the patch or the glycopyrrolate, that your loved one might build up secretions again, and that puts him at higher risk to needing a tracheostomy again. right? So then Anne-Marie continues with another email. Hi, Patrick, greetings. His oxygen saturation is 100%. Secretions are not thick, just that it's a lot. He suction very often, and I'm learning to suction also. I will make the suggestion for the pulmonary therapy adjustments. Thank you. So, you know, be very careful if you suction, if you learn suctioning, because a lot of things can go wrong during suctioning. Right? And if, you know, if you end up going home with him without support, he'll end up back in ICU in no time. If you do all the work and you don't know what you don't know, you can learn the manual task for suctioning. But what would you do if you dislodge the tracheostomy by doing so? Right? Just keep that in mind. Next email from Anne-Marie says, Hi, Patrick. This is actually an earlier email, sorry. But anyway, that was an email she sent before the email that I just read out now. But she says, Hi, Patrick, greetings. My husband has now been weaned off the ventilator. The infectious disease doctor states he has been monitoring his white cell count and they are in the normal ranges. The first attempt at the swallow test he did 7. The second attempt he did 10. I don't think the speech therapist is working with him as often as he should. He has three wounds on his bottom. Two of them are stage 3 and one is unstageable. The wounds causes him a lot of pain, so he's on pain medication for that. He has a wound on his heel that was almost healed when he arrived at the hospital. The wound care nurse states that the heel is not healing as fast as it should, and he should wear his foot boots more often to protect the heel and assist with the healing. I suggested he might need some vitamin C to speed up the healing, because at this hospital they only have the hyperbaric oxygen therapy for outpatients, and he also needs to be mobilized more. His temperature is normal and his secretions are white. I feel the doctors and nurses are retaliating because my husband refused to get a PEG or go to LTAC. I spoke to the patient advocate about this yesterday, and it seems as if the staff are being more cooperative today. We are hoping to go home soon with home healthcare assistance. Thanks for your prompt response. Well, I mean, that is fantastic news overall. He's been weaned off the ventilator and he's managing the swallowing. Now, I wouldn't worry too much about the hospital retaliating, because you've made the right choice by keeping him in ICU. Because what have I been saying on this blog for many years? I've been saying on this blog for many years that the best place for patients to wean off the ventilator and the tracheostomy is either ICU or it's intensive care at home. Definitely not LTAC. Absolutely not. You know, you suggested you might need some vitamin C to speed up the healing process. Absolutely. But also, you can't go wrong with vitamin C. You know, vitamin C is not going to harm anyone. Hyperbaric oxygen, yep, that might help. I wouldn't worry about the doctors retaliating. Keep standing your ground. You've made the right choice for your husband. Your husband is benefiting greatly from your advocacy, clearly. You know, and once you've got the tracheostomy removed, then it is so much easier for your husband to go home. Because the minute the tracheostomy is removed, you know, he can maintain a stable airway. The minute he needs a tracheostomy, it's an unstable airway. And that's obviously of concern. You know. So. Next question from just bring this up. So we worked with a client the other day who had their 8-year-old son in ICU with a hypoxic brain injury after cardiac arrest. It was a very, very sad situation. So here are emails from this family, and I'm obviously keeping all of these anonymous. Within just 3 hours of our child's admission to ICU, discussions were already being held about the possibility of ending our child's life. These conversations were presented with an overwhelming focus on the negative, painting a picture of death within hours without even an ounce of hope or balance, and with a prediction of imminent cardiac arrest that the ICU would be unable to resuscitate. We were confronted with questions such as, how do you feel about organ donation? This line of questioning was very distressing and frankly premature, especially considering the emotional state of our family at that time. We asked that my son's legal parental responsibilities be respected and that our son's time in the ICU be guided by a commitment to preserving life and ensuring our child's comfort rather than being overshadowed by defeat and negativity. Right? And this is what I said earlier. You know, you want hope and positivity, not doom and gloom and negativity. You know, that's a very reasonable request. A very reasonable request. You know, and as we were digging deeper with that client, you know, it did turn out that the child was brain dead, you know, unfortunately. However, you still can't leave any stone unturned. You know, just because the ICU team is telling you that your child, your loved one is brain dead, you need to verify. You know, especially when you are being pushed towards organ donation, or you think you're being pushed towards organ donation. Right. Another question that we had was PEG tube complications in ICU. What are PEG tube complications in ICU, and what families in intensive care need to know and safer alternatives? So PEG tube complications in ICU, what families in intensive care need to know and safer alternatives? So here's a question from Heather. My daughter's PEG tube in ICU was dislodged and caused an abscess. They had to operate her yesterday to remove it and clean it up as well as repair the stomach rupture. Now this has caused her kidneys to suffer and they want to do dialysis. I am so worried. What are the best things to do here? From Heather. Heather, I'm very sorry what's happening here. Unfortunately, complications from PEG tubes, also known as percutaneous endoscopic gastrostomy tubes, are not uncommon in ICU. When a PEG tube gets dislodged, it can cause infections, abscesses, and so forth, and even stomach perforations that require urgent or emergency surgery, just like in your daughter's situation. Now you're telling me her kidneys are suffering and doctors are suggesting dialysis. This is not surprising to me after the surgery, it's major surgery. You know, now your daughter is in sepsis, which can cause your shock, and the kidneys are often the first organs to shut down. Dialysis in ICU is often life-saving and support the kidney function temporarily until the body can recover. But on the other hand, if you had come to me a few weeks ago and asked me, should we give consent to a PEG tube, I would have said absolutely not, because a nasogastric tube would have been absolutely fine for now. It's much safer, less invasive than a PEG tube, especially in the early stages of critical illness in ICU, because now you're dealing with another layer of critical illness with the sepsis. This could have been prevented, right? Many ICUs rush into PEG tubes prematurely, especially in the United States, when a simple nasogastric tube would have sufficed. Now both tracheostomy and PEEK tubes have their time and their place, but you need to know when they have that time and their place. Certainly not after just a few days or weeks in ICU. A nasogastric tube will do just perfectly fine. Right? So I am going to wrap this up now. I want to thank you for watching this. If you like my video, subscribe to my YouTube channel for regular updates for families in intensive care and intensive care at home. Click the like button, click the notification bell. Comment below what you want to see next, what questions and insights you have. Go and check out intensivecarehotline.com if you need help for a family member in ICU. You can book a free 15-minute call with you. After that, I have paid consulting and advocacy options. Go and check out intensivecareathome.com. If you need home care for intensive care, instead of keeping your loved one in intensive care. We also have a membership for families of critically ill patients in intensive care. And you can get access to me and my team there at intensivecarehotline.com by clicking on the membership link. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care for now.